Struggling to keep track of your story and world? Archivos is for you. More intuitive than a wiki, more extensible than Scrivener, Archivos builds your story Bible into your personal, always-on tactical display. Graphical relationship charting, continuity tools, this thing has it all, with bonus options for fan engagement and real-time collaboration. I don't recommend tools I don't use, guys, and this one is good enough that even Open Source Me is using it for one of his projects instead of my trusty old wiki. Archivos. Story world management done right. www.archivos.digital. That's www.archivos.digital. Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 808. Today we hear from Scott, who asks,
I know I suffer from depression and have for decades now. Not the suicidal type of depression, but the mentally numb to the world type. I've definitely had the days where it is hard to find a reason to even get out of bed. Okay, usually that is solved for me with the press of a full bladder. So, depression has been my constant companion, if you will, for not writing or doing anything other than what's needed. The act of starting something new and then sticking with it is a monumental task. When I force myself to stare at the page, I can get a couple of usually bad sentences down, and then the words usually can flow wonderfully, and I'm happy doing it, and happy with the results, on day one. Then, day two, even though I remember how fun it was to write just the previous day, it is still as hard, or harder, than the first day. I tend to be too smart for my own good, he said stupidly. So the tricks of rewards or challenges to get back to the screen just have never worked. Magic spreadsheets, pre-writing rituals, schedules, etc. don't seem to work because my head knows writing will be nothing more than a hobby at best, so it can always be skipped. So, even though we're a few months into the year, I'm still setting my writing goals. And while I know they're not lofty by any stretch, they are for me, and getting through the depression blockade, I want to finish one publishable short story and send it out for publication. Just one! I have so many ideas that I've worked out in my head on long commutes that I just need to get them on paper. So I want one. One that I will send out to places to reject or accept. I also want to write the first story in a game world that I completely envision as a story podcast. So I want to write it and record it and test the podcast waters. I've only been sitting on that idea for about a year. But after a tabletop RPG session, it begs to be written that same night. But then the depression kicks in and says, I'm just too tired. I definitely want to get to something like write every day, or at least every weekend, but the depression speed bump monster albatross always helps me find even the most inane reason not to do the work, even when I know I love the actual writing. So, this year, trying to get just one thing out there to feel like I'm a writer, and one thing done that is just a passion project. If I can do that, for me, this year will be a success. I guess I want to get this to you mostly because of the NanoGang casts. Like those shows showed me, you can miss a word count or even just throw out the word count and just have fun writing. You can still write. I guess I want people to know that a lofty or an aggressive goal is still subjective. For me, who hasn't done more than dabble and quit for probably a decade, aggressive means one short story. So, on the depression side, other than the drugs, which my doctor is still figuring out the right mix for me, do you have any more ideas to sneak around the Onway and just get the butt in the chair and write? Thanks.
I do. Now, please don't interpret what I'm about to say as contravening a doctor's advice. But one of the side effects of the meds is that it's going to most likely curtail your creativity and your mental focus, which sounds weird since a lack of mental focus is one of the big problems with depression, but it's still the case. Most of those drugs curtail mental focus as much as depression does, that just don't do it in as unpleasant a manner. So be prepared for that. Now,
I am going to go on the assumption, and this is an assumption, that your depression is typical rather than atypical. The reason I have to do this is that a lot of people wrestle with depression, and it's a lifestyle problem. And the meds act on, they're kind of like Tylenol. They act on the symptoms of an ailment that's caused by a lifestyle problem. And the lifestyle problem is really subtle and hard to get around, which is one of the reasons why people need meds to cope. Nothing wrong with that. But if you can get at the lifestyle factors, and that is in fact the root of it, you can eventually titrate yourself down off the meds and not need them, which is great because they have other long-term side effects that are unpleasant. So with that in front, there's a few things that play into long-term monopolar depression. The first is it disproportionately hits people of high intelligence. And it does that because they've got more processor cycles going spare. No living creature does well if it's operating at partial capacity. We're designed to run at about 80% of capacity most of the time, with brief bursts up to 100% and brief deep rest periods. And one of the things that modern life tends to do is it tends to run us constantly at like 40 to 50%. And the more intelligent you are, or the more creative you are, the lower that percentage is. But it becomes a sort of chronic exhaustion. Like, you're more tired if you stand around all day than if you're walking all day after a couple of days of getting in shape. It's because your body is not designed to deal with constant low-level stress. It's designed to deal with constant medium-to-medium-high-level stress with brief bursts up into the really high range and then recovery periods. When you run at low levels all the time, as is required by most jobs, as is required by a completely regularized schedule, as happens when you're spending a lot of time on your phone, pinging around on social media, or watching TV that you're not deeply immersed in, when you're always giving half your brain, half your body, or less to something, but it's constantly engaged, you run yourself ragged and don't get anything out of it. But there's just enough engagement that it's addictive. You don't know what to do if you take that stimulus away. And so you wind up in this cycle where the thing that's making you miserable is the only thing you can think of that keeps you from being so miserable you want to kill yourself or dive into a hole and pull the covers over and shut out the world for a week. And if it sounds like I'm speaking about this with deep personal knowledge, I am. Both from when I was doing clinical psych and from personal struggles when I was younger, I am seriously bent toward monopolar depression. Some of the behavioral things that can really make a difference are regular sleep schedule. It's incredibly important. It doesn't matter what hours you're sleeping. It matters that you're sleeping the same hours every day, whether you're doing 8 hours at a stretch or 6 and 2, you know, 6 hours at night, 2 hour nap in the afternoon, what, or a 4 and 4, or whatever sleep schedule you settle on. Sticking to that regularizes your circadian rhythms, which regularizes your uptake and helps regulate your serotonin levels, which is what the antidepressants are trying to do as well. That helps give you a baseline. Number two, hugely important, sun exposure. You need vitamin D. You need to be out in the sun with your skin exposed, not so much that you're going to burn, but enough that you're getting vitamin D. One of the best things I ever did for my state of mind was to get a convertible. I would drive around with the top down, it made me feel great, and I thought it was because it was a convertible, and it was just fun. But it was because I was getting all the extra sun. And I had chronically avoided sun because I've got that Scottish skin tone that means that if you go out in the sun on a non-cloudy day, you instantly get skin cancer. So I'd avoided the sun since I was a kid, and I sort of looked like a pale fish all the time. But even being out in sunglasses and a hat, and just getting sun on my arms and on my cheeks, because I have a full beard, That was enough to give me the vitamin D I needed to majorly, massively lift my mood and my baseline. And that spilled over into everything. That was when I suddenly started producing thousands of words a day, every day. It wasn't a deliberate choice, and most of the rest of my life at the time was miserable, and yet somehow I was less depressed than I'd been in a long time. The sunlight was what did it. Something else that will do it. Regular, intense exercise. And by intense, I mean for at least part of the exercise trip, whether you're hiking or on a treadmill or doing weights or whatever. For at least part of it, you are running close to capacity. If you're hiking, 10 seconds of sprint, and then the rest of the hike. You want to be upping your endurance, you want to be getting regular exercise, but you also want to be pushing the limits of your physical capacity every once in a while, because that brings your whole system online. It makes a huge difference for your mental baseline. And finally, you want to engage your mind. You want to fully engage your mind. If you are dealing with monopolar depression, one of the symptoms is that you've always got that fog in your head. It's always gray and fuzzy. It feels like you're walking around in the middle of a swarm of bees or a force field that's going. Everything feels attenuated. So, you need practice in being fully engaged and stimulated. That for you may mean really dark horror movies. It could mean offensive comedy. It could mean learning to play the violin or learning to play the piano. It could mean getting involved in an online chess society, or if you're lucky enough in the lockdown to be with someone who plays chess, getting involved in chess games. Something that requires your full mind, your undivided attention, that you can dig into. It really doesn't matter what.
As long as it's not a Twitter war.
As long as it's not a Twitter war or a video game. Because those habituate really fast. And it's the habituation that you want to avoid. Because once something habituates, it drops down below that threshold of critical stimulation. And what you're trying to do is raise your general level of alertness. Because the alertness and the engagement take up all those processor cycles that are going to waste and that are creating that cloud of fuzz around your head. A final thing is nootropics. Now, unfortunately, the best one available is nicotine, and the delivery devices for nicotine are incredibly unhealthy, so it's not recommended. But the reason that people with depression gravitate towards smoking a lot is because nicotine is a nootropic. It doesn't alleviate depression, but it does sharpen the mind, which has a secondary effect of alleviating depression. So you want nootropics that sharpen the mind. Now, it's a big subject, and I'm not going to get into it here because not all of it's legal, and I'm not going to advocate that you do anything that's not legal in your jurisdiction, but there is one nootropic that is incredibly effective that is legal in all jurisdictions, and that is tea. It's actually caffeine. Caffeine is an incredible nootropic, but the caffeine in coffee tends to make you really jittery.
With tea, it's the caffeine combined with L-theanine.
L-theanine is an amino acid that occurs naturally in tea that moderates the release of adrenaline in the system in response to caffeine. And that gives you a quieter high and a much sharper focus without the jitters. So if you're a coffee fiend, you can get L-theanine supplements to take with your coffee. Or, if you prefer tea, get yourself strong tea and drink it religiously. And it will really help. And, caffeine withdrawal is kind of a pain in the ass. But one of the things that happens when you're moderating it with L-theanine is it becomes less addictive. And so when you go off it, you don't get the migraines, you get a few days of down. But you very quickly renormalize. Whereas if you're doing coffee, when you go off caffeine, you tend to get the migraines and whatnot, because it's dumping into the system in a different way than it does when it's mediated by L-theanine. So N-O-O-T-R-O-P-I-C-S is the class of chemicals that we're talking about. And if you want to do further reading on your own. So I think that about does it. But those things will help. They will help no matter whether you ultimately need to be on the antidepressants for the rest of your life or not. They will also help even if you need cognitive therapy to deal with emotional issues that are driving the depression, if it's not just that you're built in a way that tends you toward depression. They will help no matter what. And you'll be healthier for the trouble. But the cumulative effect of these things is that they will sharpen your head and make focus easier to achieve. All of them will do it a little bit. This isn't a silver bullet. This is like a whole lifestyle package. But on the other hand, there's no downside to it. And you'll have a healthier, happier, longer life as a result, or at least a healthier, less miserable, longer life as a result, with creativity being a little more accessible to you. Which brings me to two other things, actually, now that I think about it. I talk a lot on this cast about feeding the monster. Now, that's part of the mental engagement package, but it does deserve an extra special call-out. Because the more you feed the monster, the more ideas you have running around in your head, and so the easier creativity begins to become.
What exactly do you mean by feed the monster?
Feed the monster means stretching yourself, learning things that you wouldn't normally be exposed to. Novel stimulus that introduces new ideas into your head that bounce off each other. So feed the monster. And the second is one of the big problems with depression, one of the reasons it's sticky like a tar baby, is that it tempts you into living life based on your mood. But just like you can go to work when you're not in the mood, you can go to the store when you're not in the mood, you're an adult human being, you can do almost anything you need to if you really need to. Even if you're not in the mood. One of the things that happens when you're depressed for a long time is that you start to focus on your top-level feelings as if they were data, as if they carried legitimate information about the state of the world and the state of your being in the world. They don't. Feelings are fleeting. They are the result of a long chain of being underneath, involving your intellect and your emotions and your physiology.
It's why the phrase depression is a lie exists.
Yeah, because depression is a lie, but it's a lie that you buy into. Doesn't mean that the symptoms you're experiencing aren't real, because they are. It doesn't mean that there aren't real reasons you might be experiencing those symptoms, because there probably are. What it means is that the state of mind that you wind up in, because you focus on that feeling of useless brain blurredness and purposeless and hopelessness, all of that stuff is the top-level symptom. Antidepressants treat that top-level symptom. That top-level symptom can be hugely awful. That's why they exist. But it's the chain of being that leads to that top-level symptom that you should be focused on if you want to improve your life. And part of that involves deliberately shifting your focus off your feelings and on to the deeper things going on. All the other things I've been talking about, the exercise, the mental engagement, even the nootropics, and the vitamin D, all of those have in common that they help to recenter you down below the surface. Because the surface contains very little data. If you were studying the ocean and you only looked at the surface and it was flat, you would reach a conclusion about the nature of the ocean. And if it was very stormy, you'd reach a conclusion about the nature of the ocean. And both of them would be incorrect. Because you can't understand the nature of the ocean by looking at the surface. You can't understand what it's capable of. You can't predict what it's going to do. And you can't formulate a plan on how to deal with it. Because what's happening on the surface is one possible outcome of an incredibly complex and deep set of processes. You are an incredibly complex and deep set of processes, and your mood and how you feel at the moment is simply the current surface skim on that. which is one of the reasons why it's impossible to make yourself feel happy. Positive self-talk, all that stuff that we all learned in school, is bullshit. It just makes us feel worse because we tell ourselves, I'm great. But if you don't feel that way, what you've done is you've lied to yourself, so you're eroding trust in yourself, so you're creating a basis for further bad feelings.
When positive self-talk actually works, it's not telling yourself that you're great, it's reminding yourself of the things that you've accomplished.
Yes.
And the things that you're capable of doing.
Yes. So you need to shift your focus below your feelings. I don't feel like I can do it today. Well, that doesn't matter. You know from past experience that you can do it today if you really, really want to. Now, really, really wanting to is tough. But if you have even one experience in your life of having done something important when you really didn't want to, when you really weren't feeling it, you've got a basis to proceed from. Keep your focus on that level, and you will have a much better time winning through the depression and building up more data sets for yourself that prove to yourself that despite what you're feeling, you are capable of something different. And this is kind of like when you're single and you're trying to find a partner, how you can never find anyone, but the moment you're dating someone else, they all appear and start flirting with you. Feelings are kind of like potential romantic partners. The more you're focused on them and trying to make them work, the less they're going to cooperate. In both cases, good feelings and the appearance of potential romantic partners, what you're dealing with is the end product of a long and complex chain of interactions and events that you can't control the final step of. You have to control things way earlier in the causal chain. In the case of romantic partners, it's becoming the kind of person who people are attracted to. That's not always easy, and some people have it a lot easier than others, but just about everybody can do it. In the case of depression, what you have to do is you have to become the kind of person that you would respect and admire. Now, that also is tough, and it requires doing things a lot higher up the causal chain, things like what we've talked about already, and also things like self-discipline and practice in communication and being and acting with honesty with regards to yourself and others. Being the sort of person that if you looked from the outside at someone else doing that, you'd say, hey, you know, that's the kind of person I'd like to be. When you do anything that leads you down a road like that, you are becoming the sort of person that is less likely to be focused on their feelings of the moment. They're less likely to be deeply depressed on a long-term basis, as opposed to, you know, dealing with depression every once in a while, which we all do. But in both cases, you have to intervene further up the causal chain than at that final step. Thank you for sending in the question, Scott, and I really hope that some of it helps and that your doctor finds the right combination of meds and that your creative voice sings. And don't be afraid of setting your sights a little higher than you're tempted to. Because if you aim really high and fall short, you're going to wind up a lot further along than if you aim at something you know you can achieve. And then because you know you can achieve it, you wind up not putting enough effort in to pull it off. That's a common failure mode, especially with people dealing with depression. And it results in a sort of downward spiral because next time you set your goals in a little bit further because you figure they were out too far before.
Push yourself a little bit beyond what you think you're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
When you apply the term lofty goals to yourself, it's beyond what you know you're capable of right now, not what somebody who is like super accomplished and has been doing professional writing for 20 years can accomplish.
An analog from the world of exercise. If you're just starting to walk and you live in a city with big city blocks, you may decide that you want to walk around the block and you're pretty sure you can do it. If that's the case, then your goal should be to walk around the block 1.5 times and get a taxi cab home. Now, maybe you won't get that second half because you're so out of shape, but you'll probably get at least 1.25 blocks, which is 1/4 block farther than you would have gotten if you'd set the goal where you knew you could meet it. So, set your goals out beyond what you know you can do, and then if you fail to meet them, don't focus on what you didn't do. Focus on how much further you got than you expected. That also helps. So I'm going to shut up because this is going long, so good luck, Scott. I hope some of this is helpful. And thanks for sending it in. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty McKeon and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners. Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.